Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Did everyone have a nice Thanksgiving? Yeah, you have to say that. Everyone's like, my family, me, we're not talking, but next year. So I feel like since there was no one here today, I didn't really, and I knew that was going to be the case, I didn't really want to prep anything. So this is kind of a throwaway. I'm just kidding. But the rest of the sermons, I've been like, this is like the most important thing Christians need to know and we need to do. And I just thought maybe that was over the top. I'm going to try something different this time. Were you guys ready to hear it now?
Yeah.
You're like, yes. It kind of feels, after that powerful prayer, and then I said that, I ruined it. Let's go back. Just edit it in the video, Luis. All right, so I'm going to go to Acts 7:2 to get started. And I do actually think that the subject we're talking about today, the story we're going to talk about today, is actually one of the most important things for Christians, especially Christians in America. The thing we need to fix, the thing we need to do right. We're going to start in Acts 7, and I'm going to read 2 through 4. We're going to try something different. I'm not going to read a whole chapter today. Y'all can tell me at the end how you feel about it. If it was upgrade, we'll find out. But we're going to do a lot of flipping, so... So in Acts 7, 2 through 4, it says, "To this he replied, 'Brothers and fathers, listen to me. The God of glory appeared to our father Abraham while he was still in Mesopotamia, before he lived in Haran. Leave your country and your people, God said, and go to the land I will show you.' So he left the land of the Chaldeans and settled in Haran. After the death of his father, God sent him to this land where you are now living." So it says here that God appeared to Abraham in Ur and told him to leave his country and his people and go to the land that he would show him. And he left the land of the Chaldeans and settled in Haran. So before we talk about Haran, I just want to focus real quick on where he left Ur. And so here is a map of the area. And in that dotted red line at the bottom of it is Ur. That is where Abraham, known as Abram at the time, was living when God called him out. And I want to talk about the city of Ur real quick. This next picture is a pic of the royal standard of Ur. Isn't that so pretty? But I think when we picture cities in the Bible, when we picture the land of Ur, I'm sure that like it doesn't look like a city in our minds. It's still kind of the country. We don't really picture any modern conveniences, but that's not really accurate. That's not historically accurate, and it's not a good picture of Ur. Ur was a wealthy metropolis in Mesopotamia. They've excavated the site, and they have found elaborate systems of writing. They have found impressive educational facilities, some mathematical genius, like business records that are just extravagant and detailed, and a highly practiced religious life. This is a city. They found a Starbucks there. And even then, they were on every corner. They were like, oh, we found a Starbucks. This stinks. But at that time, Grande was this big, so we've changed a lot. Archaeologists have been astonished to find that many of these ancient cultures were far more developed than we realized. So Ur is a city. It's a high-energy, well-developed urban city, and I think we picture Abraham the wrong way because we don't picture him as a city guy, right? But so this is a more accurate depiction of what Abraham looked like when he lived in Ur. So he changed a lot afterwards, but he was a hipster. He was that guy sitting at Starbucks in Ur, drinking coffee on his computer all day, every day, that you wandered in and said, "What do you do for a job? How are you here all day, every day? I don't get it." But we'll move on. So in the middle of this city, there is a ziggurat type, it's like a pyramid type ziggurat, that is the Ur Central Worship Center. And if you will remember this picture, I'm going to talk about it again when I preach next a few months from now. So remember that picture. And who are they worshiping here? They're worshiping the moon god. And this is a picture of the moon god and some people coming to talk to him. It's a really pretty drawing or stone. So that's the moon god. And this moon god was named Ilah or Allah. That was his name. The name Allah actually shows up in Arabic writings prior to Islam. What Muhammad did was he just took a god from a polytheistic society and made it monotheistic. That's what happened. So we don't really know, and this is where Abraham lives. We don't really know much about Abraham. We don't really know backstory before his moment with God. We don't know his character prior to his encounter with God. But we do know now from several resources that Terah, his father, Sarai, his wife, and Haran, his brother, were all named. Their names, they're named after the moon god, or like the moon god's associates. So his family tree grew out of idol roots. They were involved in this culture. They were involved in this religion. They were fully engrossed in the culture around them. So we really don't have any evidence that Abraham was like looking for another god or looking for something different. We don't have any evidence of that. He was just like everyone else. He was in the world and of it. But God was looking for him. He might not have been looking for God, but God was looking for him. And we're going to read about that encounter in Genesis 12:1. And I'm used to dealing with junior high, so I'll just tell you, it's the first book. It's the first book. Because they'll be like in the thing in the front, like trying to find the book, okay. I'm just like, page one. Turn there. All right. So Genesis 12, 1 through 3, it says, "The Lord had said to Abram, 'Go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse, and all peoples on earth will be blessed through you.' So Abram went, as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he set out from Haran." So Abraham has this encounter with God, and God tells him, leave your country, leave your people, and many of your family, and go to this place. And you have to wonder, why Abraham, just in case you don't know, that's the same person. Why would God call him? Why did God choose Abraham? What was special about him? Well, it might be, if we just read the line in 12:4, after it says, "And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you," in verse 4 it says, "So Abram went, as the Lord had told him." Maybe God called him, maybe because he would go. Maybe it's a simple answer, because God knew that he would go. What if Abraham doesn't go? What if he doesn't go? What if he decides to stay? What if he doesn't listen? Would we have Isaac, Jacob, David? Would we have the line all the way down to Jesus? Would this book exist? Would Jesus still come and die on the cross for our sins? Does this not happen if Abraham doesn't listen? All of this still happens. All of it still happens because these are God's plans. God's plans come to pass. God is behind this. It's a fairly unremarkable event. A man moves out of the city into the country. We've seen that before, right? Green Acres. You know, Abraham's wife is probably like, "Oh, darling, I don't know if I could do it." And Abraham's like, "Come on, that's my best daughter's war. I'm sorry." But this insignificant event has great purpose for all of us, right? Because God is behind it. So if Abraham doesn't answer the call of God, all this stuff still happens just with someone else. Because God doesn't need us. He invites us to be a part of what he's doing, and he's always moving. Great and exciting things are happening. The course of history is being changed. People are healed, set free. People's pasts are being erased, and their futures are being rewritten, and we can be a part of it, or we can simply not go. We can just not go. God is looking for people who will be obedient. And all of us, each one of us, has been called out of the land of Ur, out of the world. And many of us, if we're honest, we don't go. Because we may not be willing to leave all that comes with it. Because you can lose some things that are important to you. You can lose reputation, money, friends, and loved ones. And for what? For what? What am I giving this up for? It'd be real nice if God would just be like, "Oh, if you leave, okay, I've got you on the 10-year plan, all right, and you're going to end up here, and this is what you'll do, and everything will be okay," and we'll be like, "All right, well, let me compare and contrast and see." But he doesn't. He just says, "Follow me where I will lead you." And so we don't really always know what we're going to get, but we do know what we're giving up. And we don't know where God is going to take us. And we see this all the time. Like, people step away from the world. Happens at camp. People like, "Man, I'm giving my life to Christ. I experienced God in a new and exciting way. He has a plan for me, and I am going to follow him all the way." And then a week or two down the road, nothing's happened. And we've lost our friends, and our family is discouraging us. And we're like, "Well, and God really hasn't revealed anything to me, and nothing's really rolling." And so we just go back. We just go back to what's comfortable. Nothing really great happens. But let me assure you, if God's called you from something, if he's called you out of something, he most definitely has a place for you to go to. He's got a place in mind. He has got a plan. God doesn't fly by the seat of his pants. He knows what he's doing, but you have to step out. You have to come from if you were ever going to get to. You have to step out of what God calls you out if you're ever going to be where God has called you to be. And God is already at work. He's already at work on his plan for your life, whether you know it or whether you are participating. Because he don't need you. See, we know God called Abraham to leave his country and his family behind to go to an unspecified place, which we know to be Canaan. But let's see how this works itself out. We're going to look at the verses just before where God calls him out in Genesis 11, 31 through 32. I got ice in my mouth in that drink. I don't know what to do with it. I'm like, do I chew it in the mic? I don't know. All right. Terah took his son Abram, his grandson Lot, son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarai, the wife of his son Abram, and together they set out from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to Canaan. But when they came to Haran, they settled there. So we see that Abraham's father actually takes the entire family out of Ur and moves them to Haran. So if you can show that map, this is a picture of their journey. And they're starting down there in the corner where we looked at Ur. And if you look at the very top of the triangle type shape, that's Haran. It's a little bit more than halfway. And it actually looks like the most pleasant part of the journey, because if you can see, they're walking alongside water the entire time. So it looks like that was the most pleasant part of the journey, but it's halfway. And when he stops, I always think, why did he stop? What happened? And there's several different options. It's possible that God set him up so that his family would go halfway with him. Because God knows sometimes when he calls us out that he has to prepare the way, that maybe he needs to make it a little bit easy for us. Maybe we need some help. Maybe he knows our hang-ups. He knows our fears. He knows sometimes we need help. And so maybe God is helping Abraham take baby steps to get where he wants him to go. But just know that even though his family is going with him, there is going to be a moment, even though he's stepping out in faith with his family around him, there's going to be another moment where he's got to step out again. He's going to have to step out again without his family, alone. Because even though God's made it easy for him, that's not the end, right? But when they came to Haran, they settled there. He doesn't go the whole way. He stayed in Haran, right? And there's many different reasons why he might have stayed in Haran. One, it's dangerous for a small tribe in a foreign land in this time, so you want to be as large of a group as you can possibly be, so, you know, for safety. But also, it would be hard to leave his family behind. It's hard to leave your family behind. Of course, after Thanksgiving, maybe a lot of you guys are like, call me God, I will go wherever you want me to go. Far away, I am in. I know, like, sometimes you're around your family for a long time, you just want to get away. It even happens for little four-year-old boys who happen to be my son. I took a few weeks ago vacation. I just took a week off and stayed because we don't really go anywhere or take vacation because we have three kids, and what fun is that? You take them in a car where they're crying the whole way, and then you go put them in a room where you really can't control anything, and then you take them out to eat where they're like, you know, I only eat steak and pizza. You know, it's like, and then you spend all that money to do that. That's vacation? No. So we just stayed at home, and I'm like, I'm gonna spend some quality time with my kids. So I was like helping Daisy out. Not that it's her job. I'm not usually home. So I was like bathing Aurora, and Aurora's like scream crying, just like, save me, mama, save me, save me. And I'm like, you say like 20 things. How come save me is one of them? Directed at me, you know? So I was like, whatever, I could have done it, but it was just getting annoying when you have a kid screaming in your face. I was like, Daisy, come handle her. And I'll handle Flynn. And Flynn is helping Daisy make pizzas for dinner because he likes to do that. And I was just like, all right, I'm gonna go in there. I'm a fun dad. I'm gonna have some fun making some pizza. And Flynn is sitting there facing the wall, and I'm over here, and I enter the room, and he's like, can you hand me some tomato sauce? And I was like, oh, you know, I'm fine. I'm like, oh, that's how it is, huh? You just tell me what you need, huh? And I just get it for you. That's how it works. And he's like, see, that's why I didn't want you in him. Because I knew that you were going to be all like, oh, that's how it is. That's how it works. I just get you what you do. can you hand me the tomato sauce? And like sometimes your kid says to you and she's like, boy, I'm gonna, but like that time I was just like, here. I'm sorry. I won't talk to you anymore, my son. How can I assist you in your project of making pizza? But it wasn't that. It wasn't like that for these people. They always spent, like every meal they spent was like Thanksgiving dinner. They were always together. They lived together. They worked together. They played together. They lived life together. So leaving family behind, that's a big deal. Not only that, but they've experienced tragedy. Abraham's brother, Haran, must have died before they left Ur, as he's not listed in the family members that move with Terah. But his son, Lot, is listed. And we know that Lot goes with Abraham into Canaan, and we actually see Abraham rescue Lot several times. So we know that Abraham loves Lot very much, right? And so we know that since Lot's father must have died before they left, I mean, that's tragedy, and nothing brings family together like tragedy. So this family is close. It's not just like, you know, and you might think, oh, maybe his son just decided not to leave Ur, but that's not how it happens in these days. Like, the family goes, everybody goes. It wasn't like the son was like, well, I got some business opportunities I need to look into in Ur, so it's best if I stay here. I got a flat. You know what I mean? Like, he had to go, so it's obvious that he died. So this family is close, and there's probably a million more reasons to stay. You know, they're still in a foreign land. Maybe they're not settled yet. They might have needed Abraham's help. He can be like, if I leave, I know Lot is going to go with me because he kind of sees me as a father, and that's two helpers, and my whole family is going, and all my flock is going, and then I leave Dad in really bad shape as he gets older. Maybe I'll just stay until he passes. It's also entirely possible, and this is what I believe as a scholar, that Abraham talked them into leaving Ur with him. I think he talked them into leaving. Like, he's like, I'm going to go. Y'all can come with me. Because sometimes we want to do what God has called us to do, but only if people will go with us. Right? I remember when I first got saved, I had this group of friends in high school. There were like four or five of us, and we were just so close. We did everything together every day. And I remember when I got saved, man, the first thing I wanted was for them to get saved. Because, man, I was like, man, we can take on the world. If they get saved, they will come with me. And, like, it will be so awesome. And I just wanted them to know Jesus as I knew Jesus. But I just found that when I hung out with them, they would still want to do the things that God had called me out of. Right? And they wanted me to be that old person. You know what that's like when you're with them and you're like there and they're drunk and they're like, I just want to hang out with you the way things were. And you're like, so annoying. Get off me. But like, and there's a time that came, I was just like, I've got to go. I want y'all to come with me so bad. I want you to see what I've seen. I want you to know what I've known. But I can't stay here and y'all want me to stay. And so I've got to go. We have to be very careful who we invite on our journey, because we may make a great start from Ur, from where God has called us. But if we need our friends, if we need our family, if we need people to go with us, we'll eventually stop. We will. We'll compromise. We'll stop where they want us to stop, where they bid us to stay. Because, I mean, that's how family and friends are. Like, let's not go to extremes. We don't have to do all that. Listen. I will go with you. We will all go with you. But we don't got to go all the way to Canaan. We don't have to go everywhere God leads. Let's just go here. Let's just go here. But then we'll be stuck in Haran if we need people to go with us where God has called us. And this is more dangerous than outward opposition. More dangerous. Many Christians only go halfway. They settle for Haran. And the thing that keeps them in Haran, other Christians. Other Christians. We like to hang in the middle of the pack. We look around at what everyone else is doing, and then we stop there. We do just what they're doing. We don't go all the way. When I first became a Christian, I started hanging out with some other Christians who had been saved far longer than I had been saved, and I just anticipated that they knew Jesus better than I did, that they were more spiritually mature, and I started doing some of the things that they did, even though I knew that God had called me out of those things. See, it was easy for me to look at my friends who weren't saved and say, I'm not doing that because I'm a Christian now. But then it starts getting weird when Christians are doing it, and you're like, well, maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. But you know what I mean? And you start looking around. You can't always take your cues from other Christian from other Christians. Just because someone has a label as Christian doesn't mean that they're pursuing God or in relationship with him. Okay, we were on a trip recently with some of our youth. I'm going to poke fun at you guys for just a second. But it's all out of love. We're out, and the girls are talking about this football player who's like super cute, you know, and they're just like, oh my gosh, that guy is so cute. Oh my God. And then he did this and he did that. And then if you're a youth pastor and you walk up and someone's talking about someone they think is, you know, they always go like, oh, he's a Christian. He's a Christian. Don't worry. Don't worry. He's a Christian. And I was like, how do you know he's a Christian? And they were like, well, okay, he wears a cross around his neck, and every time he scores, he does this. And I was just like, I have failed as a youth pastor. Everybody knows that when real Christians score touchdowns, they do this. Right? Everybody knows that. That don't mean anything. What's he pointing at? The night sky? That don't mean anything. Right? We have to stop looking around at what other Christians are doing and start looking up. We have to start looking at God. The only way you're going to find out what God has for you is to walk with him. And when you get close, he shows it to you. But you got to trust him. You got to know that when he calls you out of something, he has a place for you to go that is far better, far better. We're going to skip ahead real quick to Genesis 13:14. And you don't have to turn there. I'm just going to read it to you. It says, the Lord said to Abram after Lot had parted from him, look around from where you are to the north and south, to the east and west. All the land that you see, I will give to you and your offspring forever. I will make your offspring like the dust of the earth, so that if anyone could count the dust, then your offspring could be counted. Go, walk through the length and breadth of the land, for I am giving it to you. I'm giving it to you. In the original translation, it says this, lift up now thine eyes and look. The original Hebrew word that's translated as now is actually more similar to the English term please. So it would read, lift up, please, thine eyes. But rather than like a plea, it's more of like a strong affirmation. So here, God is deeply urging his child to believe him. He's urging him to believe him. He's in other words, he's saying, Abraham, please believe me when I tell you to lift up your eyes and look around you. I will give you this land. Please believe me. I will give this to you and your offspring forever. I think this is so awesome that God would urge him. I think it's so awesome that God loves us so much that he would urge us to believe him. He's God after all. Like if I was God and I was like, I have this awesome plan. Come with me, you little peon. Because that's how I would be if I was God. I'd be like, come with me. And then if they were like, well, I don't know if I can do all that. I'm having doubts. I don't believe. I'd be like, then stay. I'll get somebody else. Whatever. I wouldn't be like, please, 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 no, come. Right? I mean, how great a love is that he would urge us to believe him? Do you realize that when God created us, God places his heart at the risk of loss for the first time? When we choose not to follow God, we all lose. Like none of his glory or authority is lost, but our part in his plan is lost. And before God made us, he really had nothing to lose. But in creating us, he has something to lose, us. He has us to lose. He is at the great risk of losing us, of losing the ones he loves forever because we choose it, because we choose it. Not because he does, but because we choose it. God cares about us. He willingly feels the loss of our losses. And here God urges Abraham, and imagine as he's urging Abraham, just imagine he's saying this to you. Just imagine he is looking at you and you are having this moment as Abraham did, and he's saying, will you please, will you now just lift up your eyes? Just believe me when I tell you that I have got a plan for you that is far better than this. Don't stop here. Would you really miss it? Would you really miss your part in my plan? Please open your eyes. Please come. And what will Abraham miss out on if he doesn't come? What does he miss out on? Well, in Genesis 12:2, it says, this is what he says to him. I will make you into a great nation and I will bless you. I will make your name great and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. He will miss out on everything. He will miss out on the blessing and the promise of God. And we will too if we settle for the middle of the pack. If we settle to just be like every other Christian. There are so many people in this book whose names are not even mentioned. They're not even mentioned because they settled for safety. They just settled for safety. The townsfolk, the villagers, a man who asked a question, the people were right next to the living God and they missed it. They settled for halfway because we desire safety. We do. It talks in the Bible about fearing God, you know, the fear of God. Well, we don't fear God. Our greatest fear as Christians is we fear the will of God. We fear the will of God coming to pass in our lives, and something we fear even greater is the will of God coming to pass in our children's lives. Because unlike Abraham, we have a whole book that tells us stories of how that might not turn out how we want it to. It might not. There's a good chance it won't. I talk to kids all the time. I've talked to adults all the time that say, like, hey, God told me, I feel like God's leading me to do this. I feel like God's calling me into ministry. God's giving me a heart for this. I want to do it. I went home and told my Christian family, told my Christian friends, and nobody wants me to do it. What do I do? I say, get used to it. Get used to it. Do you think anyone's going to encourage you to follow God and do what he's told you to do? No one's going to believe you. No one's going to encourage you, especially not other Christians. Like, let's be honest, as parents, if your kids come like, I want to be a missionary, you're like, a doctor missionary. Think of all the good you can do, right? And then you can go do that for a year or two and then go back because we want them to be safe. You know, I remember when we were in a band and we toured and we'd give our testimony in all these churches and we were doing this ministry. Whenever I came home, I'd see people, Christians, who I'd known my whole life. When you see them at the store, and they'd be like, oh, hey, so when are you going to do that and get a real job? And I was like, oh, well, just let me check. Mind your own business. How about that? And it happened all the time. It happened all the time. No one ever, to the point where you just stop telling people, God told me something. God called me to do this. You're just like, oh, huh, I don't know. I'm just doing it because I don't know. Because you don't want to even tell people that God told you that, because you know that all the Christians you know are going to spend all their time convincing you not to do it, to stay in Haran, to settle for halfway. And that is what this book is full of. People whose names we don't even know because they're mentioned as townsfolk, villagers, nobodies. And you know why they were nobodies? You know why we don't know their names? Because they're not important. There were people in Ur at this time who were far more important than Abraham, right? Far more important. We don't know who they are. They might have been important for a moment in history, but now they're dead and gone and they don't matter. But we know who this is because God's plans do not last for a moment. God's plans are based on eternity. They are eternity based and they last longer. They last forever. They are far better than any moment of glory you might have as a villager. And we can be a part of that. We can be a part of it. If we don't settle, the only way we miss out is if we willingly decide to stop. We decide to stay. We decide to settle. Just like Abraham, we have been called by name out of our city, out from our people, into a greater blessing. And many of us have answered that call, but we have to ask ourselves, I was obedient once, but have I continued to be obedient? Have I continually stepped out in faith? Right? Am I on my way to the promised land or have I settled somewhere? Am I comfortable here? Was I leaving something behind that I couldn't leave? Because as Christians, sometimes we confuse a task for our calling, right? We say, oh, God told me to do this. That's my calling. I did it. I'm done. And God says, no, that was your task. Your calling was to follow me wherever I might lead. And the next task I have for you might look very different than the task you just did. But we think we're done. Because we accomplished a task, but we have not accomplished our calling. I want to invite the band up. Honey, come on. But listen. It is never too late to leave Haran. It's never too late. So often when I preach sermons, when I talk to people, I think the overwhelming sentiment is, if only I had done this differently. I mean, if only I had known what I know now, like if all these things hadn't happened, right? Like things would be different. Things would be different. But right now, it's too late for me. It's too late for my walk with God. It's too late for my career. It's too late for my family. It's too late for my marriage. It's too late to hope. That ship has sailed. That journey is too far. God's going to have something else that's different, because that just is too late for that. But in Genesis 12:4, it says this: Abraham was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. Throughout the Bible, we see God call people out to fulfill their destiny, and he uses them mightily when they are too old, when they are weak, when they've given up, when it's over, when it's too late, when there's no chance, when there's no chance for it to be done. And God does that so he can show his strength through your weakness. It is never too late to leave Haran. It is never, never too late to move on into the promise of God. It is never too late. And let me just tell you something. God's promises do not fail. His word will not return void. If it was said, then it is done. He has spoken promise over everyone here. He still has plans for you. He has an inheritance for you. He has a blessing and a promise, and it is from the living God for each person here. And I just want to encourage you, don't settle. Like, he may not have urged, it might have been a strong affirmation, but I, as a human, will urge you, please, please, you guys, I do this all the time, just please, don't settle. Don't settle. God has bigger and better things. And I know sometimes along the path, when God calls us out, it can be lonely. It can be lonely. I didn't cry in the last one, but I talk to these kids. I know the struggles they go through. I know how lonely they get. I know how hard it gets, how discouraging you get, how hopeless you feel. Y'all can't sit there anymore. Y'all. But God's got far better things. And he will reward you. And he will reward you. It is true for them, and maybe you're thinking there, you're talking to the youth because they've got time and they can still do it. It is for you too. It is for you too. It is never too late to leave Haran, to leave mediocrity, to leave what you've settled for and step into the promise that God has always had for your life. Let's sing.